Welcome back to Plot Pit, the show where we forge fiction from fact and folklore. John, I think I completely missed that phrase in our previous episode with Susan.
Yeah, I think so.
All right, well, today, William Atkinson here in studio with...
John LeMay.
And on the phone, we have Adrian Lopez, one of the most positive individuals, including Justina Luther, out there in the Twitter sphere today. Hello, Adrian, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Oh, great. It's an honor to have you on the show. And John, today, what have you got for us in the pit?
I've got the South Valley Spectre.
The South Valley Spectre. All right, folks, today we're talking about the South Valley Spectre for about 8 to 10 minutes. We'll get a good head on what that is, and then we're going to hash out some form of a story plot line, hopefully, and then we'll have a summary outro. For now, let's begin the descent, but first, let's get over to Adrian. Adrian, tell us a little bit about yourself as an author and who you are as a personality on Twitter.
I don't know about a personality on Twitter. Generally, I'm just being myself, so... The version you get on there is the same version that's basically if you met me in person or on the street or anything. As an author, and we'll go probably into it a little bit later, I'm really working on a children's book that honors my daughter or the memory of my daughter. But I'm also working on some other children's books that I'm writing in different genres and different styles. And actually started, because as most writers, we just keep writing different things. I actually started just writing a horror story as well that I'm just at the beginning of. So just started it.
Oh, that sounds like fun. So we'll have more on all of that in our author interview, which is tomorrow's episode with Adrian, folks. But for now, John.
Well, I'm glad you said you're working on a horror story, because this story here, I feel like could actually be a great kid's story, kind of like The Goonies combined with a little bit of horror, or maybe just Scooby-Doo shenanigans. We'll figure that out later. But it's a really interesting story. It reminds me of a TV show I used to like when I was a kid. It was from the 70s. It was called Kolchak the Night Stalker, where he was a reporter that investigated the supernatural. Did you ever hear of that one, Adrian?
Yeah, I actually remember watching some of those episodes. I probably didn't watch the entire series, but I do know it.
Cool. William, do you, that's like Darren McGavin from A Christmas Story. He's this reporter who investigates vampires and werewolves on a week-to-week basis.
No, this is something that's new for me.
Okay, cool. Well, it just reminded me, it's just a little side anecdote, but it just reminds me of a case that Kolchak would have looked into. But this one, it is a real event from the newspapers of Albuquerque back in October of 1966. So South Valley is a little rural subdivision of Albuquerque, you know, south of town, obviously, hence South Valley. Back in the 1960s, it was still mostly just farmland, irrigation ditches. I think today it's urban housing and stuff, so it's different. But back then, it was just beautiful countryside, from what I understand. And they had this weird monster kind of just stalking the countryside. It picked on one family in particular, and their names were in the newspapers. But I think, you know, for today, we just either won't mention the name or we'll change it. So this monster, so to speak, it was obviously a man of some sort, or man-like in shape. They said the body was entirely black, but what was weird is the face was pure white and had no features. It had no nose, really had no eyes. It was just a pure white face. So it was very strange. So for that reason, you know, the press dubbed it the Faceless Monster. But they also dubbed it the Crybaby Monster, because when it was outside, it would cry like a baby. And that's actually pretty common amongst supernatural creatures like Bigfoot, skinwalkers, or whatever. They always say they cry like babies, so it's kind of creepy.
Yeah, the going theory there is they're trying to lure a good-hearted victim into some sort of trap, right?
Yeah, and it's so the main family, it would always kind of terrorize. They said that when it would come around, their radio would quit working, which was strange. And so this thing, it started showing up around their home in late September, but they didn't call the cops on it until things got really crazy. So one night, they had several children, and the oldest son, he was about 18 years old, still in high school. He went out to investigate and see what this thing was, and he had kind of a confrontation with it. The newspaper wasn't very descriptive as to what happened, other than he got hit hard in the chest, and he got hit so hard he got knocked out. But what was strange and kind of supernatural is when the creature would return anytime after that, like typically throughout the day, his chest would be fine. But when the monster came and they heard it crying outside like a baby, his chest would hurt and ache, which kind of gives like a weird supernatural witchy vibe to it. You know, some people have thought maybe this was a skinwalker or something like that. But the police, they investigated it, and it kind of turned into a little miniature media frenzy in Albuquerque for a while. It was kind of comparable to the Zodiac mystery of California that would occur a few years later. You know, in this case, nobody got murdered or got killed, but it just was like the Zodiac in that everybody was obsessed with it. Everybody had a theory as to who this monster might be, because a lot of people rightly thought, you know, it's probably just a man in a weird costume. And then people would get prank calls from the monster just threatening them, and other people would pretend to be this monster. But there were at least two ranchers that encountered this thing. One said it tried to grab him as he exited his car, and then another said it really scared his horses and his dogs and got him, you know, all freaked out. This went on for a few weeks, and you know, one witness turned up and said that they had heard of a similar monster from around either 1939 or 1940 that used to haunt the Albuquerque Old Town Bridge, so they acted like this was a returning creature. Some people thought it was an escaped monkey from a zoo, just because there is a breed of, or a species of monkey that is typically all black in the body but has a white face, and they thought maybe it was one of those. The mystery would seem to have been solved when the police responded to a burglary one night, and the burglar was described as looking like the monster, and the sheriff's deputies had eyes on it, and it matched the description of just a man dressed in all black but with a weird white face with no features, and they chased him on foot to a barn. And they didn't get to the barn in time to catch the quote-unquote monster, but they found all of his clothes. He had just left them behind. So they found, I think, some black leggings, big bulky black sweater, a curly black wig. They found a white face mask, kind of just like a homemade, you know, one of those where you just get like a sheet or a sheet of paper and you cut out some eye holes, and that's the mask. And then they also found some deer hooves. Because I forgot to mention, the police had also found footprints of this monster, and they kind of resembled a deer's hooves, and so they found that the man had left these deer hooves there as well. It seemed like case closed, you know, because you had the hooves that he made the footprints with, and maybe even hit that kid in the chest with. You've got all the clothes and everything. And so it seemed pretty natural to just think that, you know, it was just a man. But the thing is, the papers never did follow-up articles on this proving that it was just a man. They never, ever identified a subject. But what's really weird, and what I purposefully left out, is the same night that they had the highest amount of sightings, they also had two really high-profile UFO fireball sightings in the skies over Albuquerque. So some people have even since speculated that, wow, maybe this was like a monster from outer space or something. And, you know, besides that, if this was just a regular man, it's kind of odd that this thing could mimic the cries of a baby so perfectly, and that would make the radio malfunction. So definitely a lot of strange supernatural threads left dangling.
Okay, so there was a couple of high-profile UFO sightings, a slew of evidence of a man in a mask, but that doesn't explain anything about this radio issue.
Exactly.
I think at this point we are ending the fact portion of the show and going into the fictionalized version of what we might create using this stuff.
Yeah.
A couple of things pop into my head immediately is, if we were to go a realistic scenario where it's all human and this guy in a mask, okay, he could be carrying around some form of interference transmitter.
Okay.
So that would explain the issue with the radio.
Yeah, right? That's like the classic Scooby-Doo, where it seems supernatural, but then at the end of it, you unmask and all that.
Precisely. So we could go with that. Then, correct me if I'm wrong, John, this would be fitting at about the same time that we had the green fireballs coming over Roswell.
So those, yeah, you could throw those in anywhere you want if you so desire, because they were pretty active from the late 1940s into the 1960s, so yes.
And we did a whole episode called The Green Variety.
Yeah.
Comets of the Green Variety. Yeah. I think that's where we came up with the Shoemaker-Levy 9 with the incident of Jupiter in drafted the cosmic egg idea. I think that's where the
maybe
root of
who
that
knows
was.
Who
but
knows?
I'm not going to use the cosmic egg here. Adrian, what are your thoughts on this mysterious white masked phantom in South Albuquerque?
Yeah, it reminded me of a couple of other things that probably a little earlier than the 60s. And like you guys said, the version of it being the guy in the mask, that is almost textbook Scooby-Doo. That's one way to go. But if you look at the other side, it reminded me a lot of the other stuff at the time, which is like the Mothman, the Slender Man, of course, mm-hmm. Bigfoot. In Mexican culture, La Llorona, which I don't pronounce that great because my Spanish is not amazing.
I believe that was correct. I think that was right on the nose.
Now, you mentioned Slender Man. I thought Slender Man was something more recent.
I think if I remember, Slender Man, the movies are, but if I remember correctly, and I could be completely wrong, I think the actual story is further back as well, or a version of it. It might be, there's the version of the Thin Man, which is similar to Slender Man. That might be older, but again,
got it.
Don't hold me to it because I don't know exactly on that side.
Okay.
But when you look at it that side, I would think probably the supernatural side of it is probably the way to go. Because again, the other one is very mm-hmm. Scooby-Doo. No matter how cleverly we work it around.
You know, I do like the idea of Mothman. All right. So you've got the general idea of Mothman and the legend there being when this guy shows up or the Mothman shows up, it's usually the prelude to some form mm-hmm. of natural disaster yeah. or a large event, right?
Yep.
So this could be the prelude to something. And you had mentioned the Zodiac Killer.
Yeah, he was, I believe, around 1968, 69, over in, where was it, San Diego or something?
Well, that would have been all up the West Coast, yeah. primarily in California, yep. but there's yeah. some credible evidence which suggests that there was some murders which occurred in Oregon and Washington, which could be attributed mm-hmm. to the Zodiac.
Actually, and this just occurred to me, I don't know why this didn't occur to me much earlier, Mothman was also 66, so this is the same
yeah,
year
back
as
at
Mothman.
That time.
Okay, wow. Yeah, I didn't even think of that. So that's interesting.
Okay, so I'm liking the idea of Mothman. It sounds like we have some, you know, credible reasons to go with that. So let's run with that. And you had mentioned that there were some credible UFO sightings about mm-hmm. the same time.
Yeah.
What if it's a mass abduction event?
Could be. That's not quite where I'm going. Well, you guys tell me what you think of this. So just because Adrian's into the more young kid, family-oriented stuff, you know, my mind kept going back to the oldest teenage brother who gets kicked in the chest by the monster. So I'm thinking of something where the three of us, we really don't know yet whether or not this is a real monster. Maybe we're leaning towards that, but as we develop this story, we might decide it's better that it's not a real monster, or it is, but let's start with our characters. I think it's this family. How I see it is Big Brother went out to fight the monster. He got hurt, and the next youngest or the next oldest sibling is the sister, you know, so she could mm-hmm. be our main heroine if you want. And I didn't put this in the historical part of it, the historical portion of the show, but this is kind of part of the lore of the area, and this is somewhere else my mind is going. Whether this is just real or imagined, witches in New Mexico could steal your heart. And it's not like in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom where they rip it out. A witch would steal your heart by stealing something from the house. It could be anything, and that would then represent your heart, and they had your heart. So I'm thinking, okay, he got hit in the chest. His heart hurts whenever the monster comes around. So I'm thinking the siblings, the kids, they know their folklore, and they think our brother got his heart stolen. And maybe he did, maybe he didn't. And that's just where my mind is going, that the young siblings want to band together to save Big Brother, who the witch stole his heart, and is the witch real? That's where I'm going.
What if the only reason that we actually age as humans mm-hmm. is because these paranormal monsters are sucking our life force?
Oh, yeah.
And so when this kid gets kicked mm-hmm. in the chest by the monster, he ages like 40 years overnight.
Yeah.
And now the little sister, you know, she's doing some research at the library or something, yeah. you know, paranormal romance reading or whatever. And then she starts seeing some parallels. Adrian, what would you do with that?
I mean, that makes a lot of sense because there's a lot of the folklore myths about, you know, the cats with your children and them sucking out your soul or your energy when they sleep. You have those stories or some of those myths that they have as well. That's actually a good one. I was trying to think as you guys were both talking. There was a horror movie where a spirit or something kept attacking the older brother. But it was really only to distract them because they wanted the sister, just like you said, the middle sister. So it was more of a distraction where everybody was trying to protect and take care of the older brother. But the target all along was a sister that nobody was paying attention to.
Oh, cool.
So yeah. that can kind of go along with that story, right? I like the idea of the sucking the life force or the soul or whatever out of that side that could explain the pain every time, you know, that the sighting was, or they heard it crying. There's that connection. Again, it goes back to maybe an energy exchange. Basically, death is, you know, all your cells just slowly dying and them not, you know, recovering or not making the new ones as quickly or as well. And it could be simply, again, if it's supernatural, that when that spirit, monster, whatever we decide to call it, touches him, it, you know, it kills some of those cells, but then it replaces it with some of its own. And that's what that connection is. That's what the connection is with the pain. That's what the connection with every time it's near. That would kind of explain that. And again, kind of lead you to what the sister will have to do later, because that's just a decoy for the entire story.
Yeah, I like it.
Now, we could easily throw some MacGuffins throughout the tale with the missing items, and that's how the witches are, you know, taking from this family.
Yeah.
And the prelude to the story, so if we're thinking about prelude, act one, act two, act three, right, the setup is the older brother, I don't know, let's put him 12 to 14 maybe, okay, 15, somewhere in there. His favorite item, maybe it's a guitar or a toy or whatever, is missing. And he last remembers it being out in the field earlier that day.
Yeah.
So now he exits the house, goes out searching for this thing, say, just at dusk. And then he doesn't come back. Dinner happens, right? You know, mom and dad are like calling him and he's still not coming back, right? You know, it's a rural property type scenario. And then he finally comes back, and that's when he's, you know, noticeably older. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, he talks about being kicked, and he thought it might have been a horse or something. You know, he wasn't sure. You know, passed out. He was not, you know, unconscious for a little bit. And then they wake up the next morning, and he's like 60. You know, emotionally, he's still 12, 13, 14, or whatever. But physically, he's clearly older. And of course, now what you could have is that obviously it's the decoy. The witch is trying to get to the girl for whatever reason. But now what you've got is the first part of the book, the mystery of where the kid went, because they all think it's now this old bum or a hobo from the railroad that stole or abducted the kid and passed out in his bed or whatever.
Yeah, and he's got to convince them that he is still their brother.
Yeah.
Classic trope. I like it. And you can play it for laughs, too, and keep it light and funny. That, I mean, the stakes are high. He could die, but, you know, we'll make it known he can get his youth back so it's not too depressing. And maybe that's like the comedic aspect, is like a 12 to 14-year-old trapped in like an old man's body.
Tom Hanks and Big.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. That kind of thing. Okay, so we've kind of set up the prelude in the first part of Act One, right? The resolution is they realize that this old man really is the kid, and now they have to go to the community for help or something. Now you're entering Act Two. What does that conflict and buildup of tension look like, Adrian?
I think a good way to go, because I like so far where you took the story with the brother and what's going on, but maybe what you do is to try to tie it all together, why it's going after the girl or something on that side, or why she's involved at some point, is maybe what he's looking for is something that their grandmother gave all of them, whatever, you know, whoever the kids are, as she was passing away or something. He and they're all very attached to it. It's sentimental. That was their grandmother's. That's why he's looking for it. That's why he's really trying to find it. The tie-in could be, and this is something that comes much later, but kind of explains. And again, I remember a version of this on something, but the tie-in could be very simply where the spirit has always been talking to the girl, but the girl thinks it is the grandmother. And she's always very kind, very loving to the girl. So the girl doesn't think anything's wrong. She explains maybe to the girl that, don't worry about your brother. He's going to come with grandma. You know, I'm just speeding it up or something like that, why he's older. But for the girl to never really be curious or scared or worried about what's happening. And this way, when it ties into where she does have to do something or fight back, it's a big shock in the story or a big turn, because at that point, nobody knew what was going on behind.
What if one of these items is a dream catcher? And the prelude to the story, the opening sequence of the story, is the grandmother gifting to each of the children these unique dream catchers. Okay. And she tells them that these items are there to protect. All right. So you're able to introduce in that early part of the story the threat, this, you know, extra dimensional creature that feeds on life force. And then also the MacGuffin of the story, which would be the dream catcher, the characters, which are the children. And you could somehow weave this into why the grandmother has this special relationship with the daughter, who's the heroine of the story.
Yeah, I like it. That would explain it.
Then you go into Act One, where, you know, the older brother goes out. He has the incident, comes back in the night next. He's aged overnight. And the girl puts two and two together for the first time of just how important that dream catcher is.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, I think if you put them not too big of an age difference apart. So I like the boy being around 15. He's old enough where he's willing to be a little brave to go try something, but not old enough where he probably could handle something out there on his own if something really happened or went down. And then maybe the sister is somewhere around 12 or 13, somewhere in there. And like you say, when she does understand the importance of that, maybe she actually starts going and looking it up, studying it and seeing, okay, what can I do for protection or something? And then maybe that's where she starts finding the other side of it, the darker side of it and what it could be as well.
Okay, and so going off that, I think I know this is my picture of Act Three. The kids, of course, go to the police and the adults and they don't believe them. I feel like another option for us or an additional story avenue is that this happened to a few other kids in the neighborhood. And so all of the kids from different families are smart enough to figure this out, what's going on, even though the adults don't believe them, which is, you know, the classic trope of the kids movie, but still. And I, you know, I just see the neighborhood kids all going on type of a, on kind of a Goonies type quest in the third act to defeat the witch. And I feel like, you know, you need to set it somewhere special. So, like, I just try and think of some weird, cool New Mexico locale. And the first place my mind goes is a place called Enchanted Mesa, about 60 miles west of Albuquerque. Because I know from folklore, Enchanted Mesa was where the witch society lived. And so I'm just seeing, you know, like the kids, you know, they got to like steal a car or something, even though none of them are old enough to drive.
And I was about to say, that's a long bike ride.
No, they steal a car because that's funny. And they got to get all the way out there to Enchanted Mesa and do whatever ritual defeats the witch and steals back the family item that represents the heart of the brother, and he'll get his youth back and the day will be saved. And I don't know the specifics beyond that, but that's kind of what I see. What would y'all add to that?
The thing that I put in there is a little bit of comedic aspect to lighten the mood and everything of otherwise a dark story. And that is they stole a car which has no gas.
Oh, yeah.
And so they get just outside of town, and then they got to figure out how they're going to fill up. What about you, Adrian?
Yeah, I actually kind of like that because that gives it not only builds up the suspense of them coming in, but it could give you the spots where maybe they start discussing the other siblings that went missing or that went dying from the thing, because you probably didn't touch too much on them earlier other than, you know, there was other families that it happened to. That would give you a way to kind of touch on what happened to them as well, because basically they're going to have to walk in the rest of the way of the town, and that would be able to touch some of that. I mean, again, this is very similar to like It in terms of the kids going and fighting the evil clown at that point, but it's kind of the same thing. They're banding together to try to figure out how to stop it.
And with the gas situation, you have the opportunity for the wandering traveler to introduce, you know, either a future ally that may, you know, that might show up later if you need to, because you've written yourself back into a hole.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe this is another individual that has had the same experience and they thought that they had already dealt with the witch. And now you have the potential for like a prequel series or a post series if you really wanted to expand the universe.
I guess where that takes my mind is they've got a crazy old man and they've got a crazy old man in the neighborhood who is a curandero, which is like a healer. And some people think of them as witches, but I mean, most curanderos, they just use herbs and they just a lot of times just pray. I'm sure there's some fringe ones that do more, but typically they just use herbal remedies and they pray. And so maybe a kind of a mystical curandero is the crazy old man they all brush off, but then they need his help and he helps them. So he could be, you know, that's part of what's it called? Joseph Campbell's hero's journey is the magical helper or whatever. So he could play that role.
It almost sounds like this could be written in a coming of age type manner, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so you're right at that cusp of entering into young adulthood, right? It's still very youthful. You're still very young. And the first threat of death or first experience of potential death is the brother. And then the old man, you know, you could have the situation where the neighborhood kids go to the old healer, and in the process of getting the information that they need or the healing potions or whatever, right, he dies. So it's kind of like that Yoda moment with Skywalker and Empire Strikes Back. Okay. And so now he can't actually help the kids. So you don't have to worry about, you know, the adult saving the child or having issues of that. You can still continue on with your 12-year-old hero.
Yeah. Well, and maybe the...
Yeah, I think...
No, I'm sorry, Adrian, go ahead.
No, I think, again, I like that direction or that angle. I think what you could do is, you were mentioning that Enchanted Mesa was known for, that's where there was some witchcraft or something happening. You could have that, have him being the character you're saying, but it could be, because a lot of that is passed down through generation. It could be simply, again, that his family was the one that was involved with that, trying to stop it, trying to protect others from it. So he has the background information or knowledge of what to do. And again, on the travel, as he's walking with them, maybe he's explaining them, telling them the old stories, telling them what they used to do, how they stopped it in the past.
Yeah.
And then again, like you say, you lose him, but that knowledge has already been passed down.
And then the girl decides she wants to be a curandera, and then you do a sequel where she fights La Llorona.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think we got it.
All right. We are now exiting our second half of the show, or the second segment, and let's do a recap here before we hit the outro. Adrian, do you want to take us through a summary of our story?
Yeah, so basically we went with similar to like a Mothman story where there is a spiritual entity that's around there tied to something that was gifted to the children of a particular family. In this case, it's going to be like dream catchers. The older brother loses it. So he tries to go find it. He, you know, has a situation with the entity and he comes back age where they don't believe it's the brother anymore because he's 30 years older than he was when he went outside. To save him or to try to help him because they can see that it's going the wrong direction where he may not be around much longer. The younger sister starts looking into it to try to figure out how important are the dream catchers, starts talking to other children in the town, and she finds out there's other families that have the same thing. They do the whole thing to try to go figure out what needs to be done. She found out about the area in Enchanted Mesa, and that could be where everything originated. They steal a car for the comedic little section of that. Can't make it all the way, so they have to travel on foot. Find an older man, the crazy old person that's almost in every town. And he somewhat is tied into that because his generational family was part of protecting people from that area. Passes on the knowledge. He gets somehow taken out either by the entity or just something along the way, or maybe just old age. Maybe at that point, you know, it was already too far for him. And then the sister, which is going to be the heroine of the story, takes it up upon herself with all the knowledge, all the conversations she had with him, to ban the rest of the children and to take out the entity to save her brother.
I think you just hit it.
You got a great memory.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's give you the final honors of naming our heroine.
Name the heroine. I think we would name the heroine. You know what? I would name the heroine after my wife, which is Judith. Let her be the hero of this story.
There you go. So Judith, if you are listening, congratulations. Adrian's now going to write us a book, send it over, and we'll get publishing on it right away. All right. Well, folks, we hope you've enjoyed this wild ride starting in Albuquerque, South Albuquerque, and going out into the Mesa.
Yeah.
All right. Well, folks, we have been on the phone here with Adrian Lopez, the recipient of our second Positivity Attitude Award. Again, thank you, Adrian, for your positivity on social media and your time today.
You're welcome, and I thank you guys. I really enjoyed this.
Awesome. So we're going to have you back in tomorrow for an author interview. Folks, stay tuned for that. And in the meantime, we got a little housekeeping. You can catch us out at plotpit.com, any of your podcast streaming services. Also on Discord, Adrian Lopez is a member of our server, so you can interact with Adrian, should you desire, either on Twitter at Berserker1971 or on our Discord server. We will be starting a live Twitch stream soon. I know I'm teasing that. It is coming. And I think the last bit that we have to discuss is we are now concluding the last portion of our season one.
Yeah.
And we're going to take a couple of month break. We've got a little bit of housekeeping to do, some file management, other stuff. But more importantly, we are working on original content, including a short film.
Yeah.
So stay tuned for more information on that. It's going to be a lot of fun. And I dare say, John, it might have elements of what we talked about today.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. For now, again, Adrian, thank you for your time. We'll catch you in author interview episode next.
Thank you.
All right. John, anything?
No, I think that's it. All I know is we saved Adrian because we knew we'd go out strong that way.
Yes. So to that end, for now, folks, goodbye from Roswell.